हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 55. So the doubt. Does the very manifestation cause manifestation or not? Uttara. If manifestation causes manifestation, it must require a further manifestation, etc. This is an infinite regression. If it does not cause the manifestation, nothing would arise since the effect is non-existent and temporary. Both these alternatives are faulty, since in the first case there would be a constant perception of the effect, and in the second, no perception of effect at all. Right? So, you have so is the manifestation causing it? In other words, is pradan, is that causing the creation? So if you say it is, then what causes that? Because that has to be some regression. So that will have a fault. And if you say it's not creating, then where's the effect? There's no effect. There's no creation at all. Right? So both of them are wrong. Right?
No.
So it's not that it affects and not it.
No.
It's not that, in other words, there's something beyond it that is the potency that is causing the creation. Right? And because it's unconscious matter, it's not causing the creation. So that means it's coming from something else. Therefore, it's coming from Brahman. Brahman is the cause that's there. It may be that the material energy is what is being used to manifest the result. But it's Brahman that's doing it. Does that make sense? So one has to be careful that it's not working in either way. Because that's the point, is that you say, well, is this or is it that? That's the point, is it's not either of those. It's the Lord. And so, therefore, you see both of those there. It appears that it's doing, but at the same time, it's not doing. And he's doing, but at the same time, he's not doing. So that's why, then, logic doesn't really like this kind of a position, because it appears that it's not logical. But the point is their so-called logical points aren't logical either. You know. But because of the desire to work within logic, then it's considered to be something of value. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like if you're hungry and there's, you know, some things to eat, but none of them are what you want to eat. So which one will you pick? The one that you least mind eating. You don't like any of them, but you like this one not as bad as the other ones. Right? So like that, it means you will pick. So because they have defined that they're going to make choices based on their mundane logic, they'll pick the one that most suits their position. Right? Because if you accept the Lord, then their whole position goes out. That's the problem. Because their solution is material. So if you accept a spiritual solution, then their material position doesn't really have any value. And that's all you always see, is that's always a major thing in their argument, is don't say that, because then you make this position useless. Yes. You make logic useless, you make this and that. And then they're trying to say, but logic is very valuable and all that. Even you use logic and all that, so why would you make logic useless? But the point is here is we're making it useless, and that it is what's going to make you understand. No, it's that you are, means we're using, if we're using logic, we're using intelligence. Right? Mm-hmm. So then when the intelligence is engaged in Krishna's service, using the medium of logic, Krishna being pleased with the devotion, then through that logic, he reciprocates, and then you have an understanding. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening. It's not that the logic itself reveals. It's the medium. You know, just like the pots don't cook the lunch. They're a medium. Because otherwise, if the pots cook the lunch, can you imagine how easy it would be for all those restaurants and that? They don't need any cooks. You know how trippy cooks are? You know, especially as you go up like that, especially if they were trained in France. I mean, those guys throw pots and pans at you if you do something wrong. Because, you know, they're so good that you do something stupid, they just can't tolerate it. Because, like, you know, why is this idiot in the kitchen in the first place? So if the pots did all the cooking, all you'd have to do is have a spot and a kitchen, you know? And then you're done. Then just the pots cook everything, and then you just serve it out. Pots don't require any, other than, you know, a good, you know, how you say, a good scrub or something like that, you know, like that. You know, that's all they require. You know, hang them up nicely, and, you know. Yeah? So, that's the whole point, is logic does not create understanding. It's the medium that understanding comes through, but it itself doesn't create it. So that's the foolish. So if you think logic creates understanding, then what's the other major mistake you'll make? That's in jnana. So in karma, then what's the other mistake?
I create the results.
Yeah, I create the results. The material energy is doing all this, like that. You understand? So karma is then a major thing. It's the cause of all this. So in both of them, we're not seeing the hand of the Lord. Therefore, it's not understood. So it's one of these others. So that's why we say they're not really different. They're just whether it's attached or detached. And so since the soul by nature is attached because of energy, detachment is simply a negative of the positive attachment. Right? So because it's out of this material world, it's considered a superior position. So jnana is given a better position than karma. Right? But in actuality, as far as devotional service goes, then you have to use the both together. That's the whole point. They're not meant to function just on their own. It means you have knowledge that you engage in Krishna's service, right? And then that creates Krishna's happiness. So when you reflect it into the material world, it goes the other way around. So knowledge looks like it's the top, then activity, then, you know, the sentiment and personal dealings and all that. They're on the bottom. Right? So in other words, personal things can be a sacrifice for being practical. Right? And then somehow or another, always the intellectual end up on the top. But on the spiritual platform, it's the other way around. Right? Not that they don't know all the intellectual stuff, it just doesn't have that value. Just like, it's not that an intellectual can't be a nice guy or be practical. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So this jnana and karma in the material world, actually the jnana like serves karma, supplies the philosophy for them.
Yes, yes, yes.
Even it looks like it's spiritual and out of this world, but actually it supplies for the material karma.
Because you're going to apply it. In other words, jnana, even though it's the senior, but with that knowledge, then you'll apply it.
Yes.
And get your results. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's always going to be, because we're looking at it, we want things to always be just one way and it looks nice. But it goes both ways. You're senior, but at the same time in another context, and you're junior. So that's the whole thing, is we want it to be, I'm senior on all platforms. You know, a bit of, how you say, more of a Machiavellian approach. You know, it's just absolute dictatorial control. But it doesn't work like that. If you have authority, you don't have control. You have control, you don't have authority. You know? So that's why in the modern, they want authority, they want to control, no responsibility. Right? The person who's the authority has the responsibility. then the person who has the control doesn't have the authority or the responsibility. You know? But nowadays people want the authority. Someone else should do the work. They have the responsibility. If something goes wrong, it's their fault, not our fault. You know, but I maintain my... It doesn't matter what happens, I maintain my position of authority. It is. That's the whole point, is that that's what we're saying. It becomes distorted as you come down. That's why then on the spiritual platform, it'll be in its natural state. Right? When you come down into the level of jnana, then it has a proper understanding, but then the problem is that platform of jnana, it's about the liberation, getting to only the spiritual platform, not functioning within that. So it's already, you can see, it's distortion. In other words, spiritual without the transcendental platform, without bhakti. Right? Then you come down into karma. Then in karma, then you're doing the right activities, but there's not enough understanding of the detachment of the soul and of the, you know, the liberated platform and of the devotion to the Lord. But you'll see externally, it'll look the same, basically, as in the spiritual world, but the mentality is not right. It's self-centered instead of God-centered. But now when you drop below Dharma into V-Dharma, you know, into the social, you know, the point of Artha, all the social, economic, and justice, and all these kind of things, then at that point, then we see now it becomes distorted. Because now the authority is not the Veda, the authority is not, it's not that they may not accept those things of the Veda they like these philosophies. They accept from the Veda what they like, they just happen to accept a lot more than the modern. And they know it comes from the Veda, while in the modern they don't know it comes from the Veda. So anything decent is from the Veda, and anything that's not, it's not. But they put it together, it can constantly change and all that. And so the mixes of it aren't right, like a businessman running a hospital. You know, it's supposed to be, if you look at it, health is just the natural thing that's supposed to be there, so it should be easily available to everybody. But as far as the businessmen, then they'll make it more difficult. So if it's something like a cold, yeah, everybody can get it, but the more life-threatening it is, the more expensive it becomes. Even though it doesn't necessarily cost anything more. You know? Does that make sense? You know, like some of these, like let's say the drug for getting rid of a cancer. They find something that you can take it gets rid of cancer. It probably, to synthesize it and make it, does not take any cost any more than an aspirin. But the aspirin will cost you, you know, 1 cent, and the other one will cost you $10.
10,000
per gram. Yeah, so like that, because they can make money off, because it's more life-threatening. Because the cold medicine is too expensive, you just don't take it. But this one, you have to take it. So that's what happens when businessmen get into an area that's supposed to be done by Brahmins. Because that's the point, is that all these levels make money. And then when businessmen get into governance, then, you know, the taxing and all this and that. So all these things are there. Is that it's not supposed to happen, but then it does happen, so it's more distorted. Right? But you can still see is how it's socially organized and everything like that. Then it drops down into the sensual, and that, and so if it's not based on the Shastra and all that, then anything goes, because basically anything can create a sensual experience. So then which one you take as prominent, or what you mix and match together, then you have 8,400,000 varieties of, you know, and that's enough. You could get more, but, you know, that's what Krishna limits it to. You know, so then it gets very distorted. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that it's just a matter, as you drop the consciousness, it goes down. So the whole thing is, you have to see is that this natural position is, it's always balanced between masculine and feminine. You know, so that's the thing, is that we want the authority, we want the control, and we don't want the responsibility. We want all the benefits, you know, we want to have a, you know, total monopoly. At the same time, you know, we want to be able to so-called share, as long as they all understand that I'm the main shareholder and on my terms. And, you know, so you're not getting anything that works properly in relationships. So as long as there's the social construct is appreciated that if we work together, then we can maintain this particular level of sense gratification we have, then it functions. But the problem is as it goes, then we try to make everything equal. How well can it function if a guy who's not qualified and the guy who is qualified? Right? Let's say I have a particular government position. Now, according to your standard way of doing it, means we're leaving out bad qualities here, then whoever has the most qualification would get the position. But when you try to make everything equal, then you have to make an arrangement that people that aren't qualified, but they go into a target group that you say should also have the opportunity, then they can be in that position. Now, of course, from that group, you may pick the best. But if their best is, you know, only a half or a third as good as who should be in the position, how well will that position run? So that means does that make sense? So it sounds like it's good, but the point is why not just make it that anybody could apply, anybody could go? So the point is are they trained? Are they that? So make the training available. But instead, you just throw it open like that. So then, if that's the case, why not include everybody who only got a pass? You know, I mean, because otherwise, if you go for the mainstream, you have to have 90%. But if you go into this alternative group that has to be representative, then the best guy's got a pass. He's got 30%. So now that means he's at one third the ability of the 90%. And that we're just being nice, because I think as you go, it becomes a little bit more dramatic. But in any case, if that's the case, if you're actually being equal, why not just open it that anybody has a 30% pass can take part? Why are you being discriminative that only that particular group, they can get by with 30%, and this group can't? They have to get 90%. So you see, it's not actually real. And so it doesn't function. So then you'll always have this big problem between those who want to be practical but don't care about people, and those who seemingly care about people but aren't practical. But they care about people in an impersonal way. It's not a personal way. So that's the point. If everyone's equal, how personal can you be? You know, and if you discriminate, then you can be more personal.
Yes. So they say equal, but actually they are making it unequal.
They're making it unequal. It's because the point is there is no material solutions for material problems. You have to understand what is the position, how it works, why someone's in that mentality. And that's for this life. They perform the thing, next life it will be different. So yeah, it is equal opportunity, but it just depends on which life you're in, you know, whether you get the job or not.
Yes.
You know. So people can't be proud, people can't take advantage of it. That's why I said we're looking at it without bad qualities here. Because you throw in bad, then it just, already it's a mess, and you throw bad qualities on top of it, and it really becomes a mess. As Hansidudu Prabhu would say, a can of worms. You have all these worms and they're going, nothing's going on, it's completely crazy. You can't figure out, you know, they're all tied up.
Now that in certain countries there is a law that the employer, he must employ those who are disabled or drug addicts, and this kind of law.
But the point is that's all right as long as they qualify. Yes. See, the thing is that if you have 10 people, they're qualified, but of those, then, you know, 4 of them are in this category. And you would avoid them just because they're in that category. Not that they wouldn't do the work nice. Like the guy in the wheelchair could probably do the job very nicely. In fact, he might do better because he's sitting in his wheelchair. It's more of a trip for him to roll down to where the coffee is or the water and hang out there. So he'll have a tendency to stay at his desk. So he'll probably do more. But in any case, just because he's handicapped, you don't do. They were a drug addict. They were a criminal. You know, but now they've served their time and all that. So we'll discuss. So then that you can say is no. You see who's qualified and take them based on that. It has nothing. That would be equality. But saying no, that you have to take from here, then they're not qualified, and then what do they do? And then if you give them a lower job, why don't they have higher jobs? So then the whole thing is it about who can do something, or it's just sentiment?
Kind of one.
Yeah. Kind of one.
So jnana is masculine and karma is feminine?
In this case, you'd probably put it like that, if you want to do that, yeah. So they have to be balanced. So in other words, based on knowledge only, you act. Right? But the action has to be with detachment. So that's jnana again. Right? And the knowledge itself without application doesn't have any point. Right? Because otherwise, how do you see the knowledge? But if the action is not based on the knowledge and doesn't reveal the knowledge, what's the point? So the thing is the two go together. You always have to have the two. That's why in the Vedic, you see is that all these great scholars, they're also very practical. So you don't have anybody who's a scholar who's not practical. You know? Does that make sense? Unless you get into someone who identifies as being a scholar and is proud of it. Then you might see that it's not so practical. But everybody else, Vishishta, he's there. He's one of the big, you know, big intellectuals within the universe. But he can be Rajguru for the kings. You know, so how practical is that? That's the whole point. They go together. You know, in the modern thing, it's all, you know, it's all right brain or all left brain. You know, but then they figured out, well, it's got to kind of be, you've got to get a balance. So they figured out some way, weirdo way of doing it. You know, it's like, you're the CEO, do a little yoga or something. You know, something like that. You know, balance it all out.
It's more of the present people. They are kind of impractical. Jnanis.
Yeah, they're impractical. But the point is, so then practical people come along and take it, and then they become prominent because they actually use it. So due to their false ego, but they're not attributing it to the intellectual platform. So how is it supposed to fit? Because the point is that knowledge is applied, but it has to be applied according to what is the standard. Right? It's just like, okay, if you have a Vaishya, he's managing the hospital because he knows how to do it and sees that the money and all that. That's fine. But it should be that there's a Brahman above him. You know, in other words, the doctor's the superior. He's just there organizing it. Right? Does that make sense? But no, they do. They tell the doctors. They decide how much they say. They decide how much everything costs and how it'll work and this and that. So that's the difficulty.
Like, when you say about Krishna and his expansions okay, down the line, and when you say about one manifestation causes another manifestation, but then is it a correct understanding that the concept of regression doesn't apply over here?
Because why would you be applying? Why would you be worried about regression when you're talking about one person?
Because it's cause and effect. Although it's one, but still it's different at the same time. Hence,
you're trying to, with a crowbar and a, how you say, 2.5 kilo hammer, trying to force this into that position. It's the same person. Why? Where is the regression? You know what I'm saying? There's only that when you talk about energy and energetic, then there's a regression.
Okay, so we don't apply your regression factor.
No, that was the point that was made previously. Is that they're saying, so, well, you have infinite regression. They're saying no, because you have the Supreme Lord. He is that. He's unchangeable. He is the source of that. So it's not that he has a source, because that's the definition of Brahman, is he has no source. But energy does have a source.
Yeah. So then regression applies only to feminine. Like the Brahman down on
us. Yes. That's what he's saying. So when it gets up to Brahman, that's where it stops.
Okay.
You know, you heard the saying, the buck stops here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's where the buck stops.
Now, if we say that, if somebody says that pradana has no source, means it's implicated that life comes from matter?
Yes, yes. So you'll see is all the six philosophies, other than, you know, that means, in other words, the Vaishnava philosophy, then life comes from matter, I mean, from spirit, right? But life comes from life. But all the other philosophies that are not Vaishnava, it's all that they come, life comes from matter. Mm-hmm. All of them, all six. Mm-hmm. They may have their different angles on how that comes and, you know, those kind of things. But it's all life comes from matter. So that's the difficulty that comes, because, you know, saying God took some mud and made it into, you know, Adam and all that. But that he may take some dirt and made Adam's body, but where did Adam come from? Because otherwise, if the body is Adam, then why do we say you died? Because the body's still there. Right? So then we say there's the soul. Right? And the soul go to heaven, but at the same time we're attached to the body, and so we bury the body so you can take the body with you. Right? But we all know you can't take it with you, right? So, yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that it gets mixed up. Is that there's an inkling that there's something more. In other words, it's like as you let's say you're in a very dark place, like in a cave or something like that, as you start to come towards the entrance, you see it starts to get a little bit lighter, but you still can't see the light. You still don't know what's going on. So as they come up and accept God and His position, then there's a little bit more light, but we can see it's not enough that they actually understand what the soul is, because the soul is on vijnanamaya. So even if they accept the theistic principle, they still may not really understand the soul. Like that. So until that's accepted, then they won't really see what it is, because they'll say it's not the body, it's the body, this, that, you know, so they can't really figure it out. You know, they can't figure out Krishna, you know, Krishna, God's a person and all that, and so, you know, Adam and you are walking with God, but at the same time, then does he have a form or not? You know, we say there's heaven, that has to have a form, otherwise why would we go there? But somehow or another God doesn't, and it's his place, and at least before he was walking around in that place, so that, is that actually God, or that's someone else? And if that's someone else, I think there's a term for a demiurge or something. It means that it's some aspect of God, but it's not actually God, so because then that form has, so they get into this whole trip. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that there's not enough information, and so then they can't understand. So these are all the effects of karma and jnana. So it's only when you have the pure Vaishnava philosophy or the Vedanta, then you can actually understand what is the soul, what is God, what's the material nature, and their relationship. Then it's very clear. But otherwise, with any other philosophy, they can't answer this. Doesn't matter how developed it is, how nice the words are, you know. But they don't have, like, if you go into the philosophical kind of thing, they have some great words, but they still don't understand what's there. You go into the religious things, you know, based on Latin that is used by the church. They have some really good words that specifically make a particular point in the philosophy. But it still doesn't mean that they know beyond that. Because it doesn't all the way go through to the Lord's desire, and therefore the activity is based on the knowledge. So there's a weakness.
It's very interesting, actually. You touched the point how simple all the philosophies boil down to: either the light comes from matter or it comes from life.
Yeah,
you know, that's all what that is.
And yeah,
but it actually looks so various, many varieties.
It looks like it's so much, but it's not. That's the point of the Vedic, is that when you're studying it, you'll always understand what's the core principle. On that, everything else is developed. But the difficulty is intellectuals, if they're mundane, don't like simplicity. Hmm. Because it's like that point. Could you explain that to a child?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the point. Mm-hmm. Now, what is your position that you've just been through you know, let's say 25 to 27 years of school, and you really worked out, you know, 4-point average and the whole thing, you know, turned in a 1,000-page thesis, you know, went through with flying colors, you know, the whole thing. Now, you've done all that, and then the essence of what you know a 5-year-old could understand. Will that work for them?
Very humiliating.
No, it won't. So that's why you can't bring these things up. They won't appreciate it. But now, if you take that, and then if you look at it from the intellectual point of view, is here you have this core formula by which now you can apply it to everything, and it always works. Right? What is it that the physicists are trying to discover? What is their, you could say, I mean, other than, you know, where life comes from and this and that. But what is it that, what it, as far as a formula, mathematical formula, which one do they want? They want the universal principle. That it can apply to anything, by that you know everything. It's just one formula. Right? But then they'll think we're sentimental because we say you know God, you know everything. But that's exactly what they want. They want this formula. You know, it's like Einstein's equals MC squared, right? So that's a little dinky thing. And from that, it powers the whole thing. And now they come up with finer points and everything like that.
But you see, universal principle, right? And it works.
It works.
It works.
Yeah, okay. So that's what they're into, is the universal principle. But does it describe why the material world's here? Where it comes from, so it's not as universal. So our one will describe all that. It'll describe theirs and what's beyond. Because they want to know where life comes from. So when they can, they apply that onto that, and does that give them their answer? Okay, we'll move. I'll take that and say, okay, move on. So you understand the problem we're talking about here. So that's the whole thing, is that you have something so simple that can actually explain everything that it's not really, really appreciated. But in the Vedic circle, it is, because now you have something that everything can be compared to, no matter how simple it is or how great it is. You can always apply it. Does that make sense? But it has a particular mood in which it's applied. That's what makes it very nice.
Can we say that those six philosophies, they also try to find universal principles?
Yes. Because everybody wants something that answers all questions. Everybody's looking for that. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, what do they want to do with it? You know, so then, yeah, that's pretty standard. So that's the thing, the Vedic, it already gives it. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, that applies to everything. And you can use it in so many various forms, the masculine, feminine, and the Chaturvyuha. You can use it in these various ways. And then you can, you know, it always then is able to apply. Does that make sense?
When you say about cause and effect, so you have the cause, then you have the effect. So now in this particular case, we have cause to be the masculine and effect as feminine. That same effect now takes the position of cause and it manifests another effect. So now, previously it was feminine, now it has become masculine. So is the position always going to change in this?
The point is in that, do you see the cause and the effect?
Yes.
So that means if the cause is masculine, the effect is feminine, will there not be that masculine element within that effect?
Sure.
Yes, so then why can't you then see that? You understand? Because it's all Krishna, it will always have that same formula. It's just a matter of that you have to apply the formula on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Then as it goes back, it still applies again.
Yes.
Yeah? So it's just you have to know what's the situation you're applying it in, and so therefore how to apply it to that situation. That's then what the practice is, you know, the understanding. So we're learning the same thing from different angles. Yes. Well, that's the whole point, is because Krishna is ever fresh, he's always expanding. So therefore it can look new.
the whole Vedanta Sutra later.
The whole Vedanta Sutra?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, we're not used to it because even though we've been discussing Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, we always think Sambandha Prayojana Abhideya. So that you have something that's Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, then that seems very different. So that's one thing. And then it just gives names for these little things that we'll just say, yeah, you know, Krishna's the origin. So that will have a name. You know. So that's the whole point, is that it just breaks down, because this is the point where you discuss that all the other philosophies can see where there's a problem. Because if you discuss below this, then they'll go on arguing forever. But if you come up to this point, that's where their weakness is. And for us, that's just where we get started. You know, so that is beyond what they want to deal with, and for us, it's kind of below what we want to deal with. So it's easier for us than it is for them. Because for us, it's about the relationship and interaction, the practical, you know, of the devotion between the Lord and the devotees. That's what we're trying to get to. So this other thing of just the knowledge itself and how it applies, so they're trying to apply the gyan like that without understanding the you know, God is a person, or that there's a supreme at all, you know. So even though they're functioning on this aspect of the Brahman platform, maybe a touch of Paramatma, you know, at least in some cases, but otherwise not. The Bhagavan aspect doesn't come into play, so then that doesn't give any reason why it goes on. So then you have to just put in your own reasoning.
What is the end point? Ours is a starting point.
Yes, because what are they? What do all these philosophies want? What do they want?
Liberation.
They want liberation. And so for us, that's just the environment in which you work. Just like, okay, let us say, okay, everybody is in the living room, right? No one's in the kitchen. Okay, so now it's going crazy in the living room, so you want to get out of the living room. Where do you want to go?
Kitchen.
And that's just to get out of the living room, right? But for us, we go into the kitchen to cook, you know, do something, make something nice for Krishna and the devotees. So it doesn't even, so for us, being in the kitchen just means now you can cook, right? It's harder to cook in the living room, unless you have property city and then you know, you rent your arm in there and turn this on and do that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so therefore for us, Brahman is simply the platform in which we work. Liberation is simply the environment that we work in. But what you do in that environment, that's what it's for. It's not that you're in the kitchen. That's not special. It's what you do in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not that Michelin hands out stars because they go into the kitchen. It's just a nice kitchen. Mm-hmm. Right? They like what comes out of the kitchen.
Therefore, even if they go to Brahman, they again come back to the material world. Just like if you go to the kitchen and don't do any activity, then you come back.
Yeah, you get bored. You know, you calm down and this and that, and that. But that means you will be there alone. You know, you can say no, but someone else will come. We can sit and talk. No, they won't, because you're just out of the living room. Talking goes on in the living room. Mm-hmm. Right?
In the five levels of consciousness, so which class of people fit in this Vijnanamaya consciousness?
Vijnanamaya, that's the jnanis.
Jnanis means, like, we are telling that these jnanis...
Means all, basically all these schools fit into there.
But
like that.
They're not accepting the soul. Vijnanamaya is that.
No, Vijnanamaya, they're accepting the soul.
Okay.
So they all accept that they're soul. But most of these schools put more emphasis on that. Karma puts more on the good work that the soul will do. So you can say it's practical and things like that. So even though it's working on that, in one sense, technically that way, a lower level, but it's a much more developed philosophy. It's much more accommodating of more of all the verses of the Veda. They can interpret all the verses of the Veda according to karma.
Yes.
Just like Vedanta can all according to devotional service.
So that means these six philosophies accept the soul, but the source is the matter only.
Yes, the source is matter. That's right. And then what you should do to elevate yourself. So one is intellectualize through logic. Then there's you're using logic, but it's the seeing the atomic aspects. That's what's going to bring about. In other words, if I use logic and understand what I'm not, and what's happening, what's not, by that I'll come to the truth. Vaisheshika is that if you understand, the nature of atoms, then you'll understand the truth, because everything's just atoms, so you get yourself out of the material world. Then Shankya is then more developed. These atoms, and they have, different combinations and effects and all that. So when you understand the 24 elements, then you'll actually understand. Right? Then yoga then includes the mind, so then you have to control the mind, because the first three don't deal with the mind. They just deal with the intellect. Right? So then yoga then controls the mind. And by that, then you analyze according to Shankya. And so then in this way, you will then bring yourself to the point of controlling the mind through the meditation, and then come to the point of liberation. Right? Then karma, then they're seeing that everything's, connected with karma, and to the Supreme, but it's the karma that's important. And so if you always do good work, see, their point is that these other four schools, they're missing the point. You don't have to give up work. They're doing work, but being frustrated because they see that it gives a bad result. And so therefore they want liberation. So the karmis, they're thinking that, no, but if you always do good work according to Shastra, then there can't be any bad results. So why would you be frustrated? So you can therefore... stay happy forever. Right? So that's their idea. So going for liberation, they think is a cop-out, because you're actually supposed to do good work, and by going for liberation means you give up work. Mm-hmm. So they consider that these other schools are lazy. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Including the Vedanta, because they're going for renunciation. The Vaishnava Vedanta, now that will solve all the problems of all these. Right? It's logical because it comes from Krishna. The atoms are Krishna's, all the 24 elements come from Krishna, and they have their particular, how they function according to the laws. That's according to Krishna's nature. Right? Yoga means meditating upon Him. Karma means performing your activities for Him, and detachment you get in Vedanta. That is, you're supposed to be detached from the material world. You're supposed to be detached from the result of karma. Right? In other words, karmis are attached to the result. Then you go into Vedanta. Then they're not attached to the result, but they don't perform an activity to be detached from. So then the Vaishnava position, you're performing the activity with detachment. Right? And so all these other four aspects, they're all there. That yoga is there, the Shankya is there, these things are there. So it's the actual complete philosophy. It already includes everything else. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So this karma nonsense also have detachment aspect.
Detachment means immediate detachment. Mm-hmm. Means I'm doing the yoga with detachment, but for the purpose that I'm going to be elevating the heavenly planets and have a good time.
Like a real businessman.
Yeah. They know how to control the senses. Means, in other words, I restrict my engagement of the senses for small things, so that I can get bigger.
So that's everything is very dynamic, not that this.
Yeah. So it means like the fisherman catches a small fish. But he's not attached to the small fish. He uses the small fish as bait to catch the big fish. But it doesn't always work. So that's the problem. Because you're looking at the happiness coming from the illusion. Then whether it's small happiness and illusion or big happiness and illusion, it's still an illusion. Right? Let's say you're hungry. And you think of, let's say something small. Like one samosa or something. Right? Now, thinking about that, are you satisfied? but is your body satisfied? Okay, let's put that. Now, let us say, now you're really hungry, so now you're thinking of this huge feast.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is your body any better off?
Mind is.
Yeah, mind is, but body is just the same. So that's all. It's just as you develop the karma or the jnana, it seems like it'll be better. But for the soul, neither of them give anything. That's the point. Karma and jnana give zero for the soul. Now, if you take that karma and jnana and use it in Krishna's service as a medium for that devotion, the devotion nourishes the soul, not the karma and jnana that you're using. So the yukta vairagya doesn't it, the form of it and the mechanics of it, the knowledge of it, that doesn't nourish the soul. It's the bhakti that does. So that's the mistake, is we think that all these externals, they actually make devotional service work. No, they're the medium, because you could use something else. Sudama Vipra, then what kind of offering he did? You know? But now if a rich man comes to the temple and pulls out this old cloth and a little bit of chira in it, and then puts it in front of Krishna, you know, that just like Sudama Vipra. You know, so when I go back home, then please, you know, I'll have all the offerings of Indra and everything like that. It might not work out so good.
Using chela instead.
Sorry?
Using chela instead of devotion.
Yeah, yeah, like that. So that's the whole thing, is according to the position you use. But it's the devotion. So you need the form because it's what you express it, but it's the expression that's of value, not the form. Because you can leave one form for another as long as the expression is there. Right? Does that make sense?
I have some few doubts.
Few doubts.
Why is it that since this position of jnana to karma in the material world is reflected in the opposite way as in the spiritual world?
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that it's more respected in the material world?
Because it's reversed. What's the highest is the lowest.
Okay, so the respect is also reversed.
Yeah, means the yogic Brahmins, you know, are kind of like the lowest group within Vrindavan, right? But over here, they're the top. Does that make sense? And the girls out dancing at the disco, they're the lowest. Right? So that's how it works.
Okay.
No doubt.
Then another one is devotees, as we know, our acharyas, they look kind of like jnanis and philosophical, but actually what they say and do is very much touching to the soul, to the heart of the soul.
Because they're talking about Krishna. We're taking it as just knowledge. They're talking about it as Krishna. And so there's a science behind it. So they're just explaining the science. In the spiritual world, they use it. But here they're explaining it and showing us how to use it.
Okay.
Because we have such a refined development of our mental, you know, understanding on how we're God, that therefore how far the philosophy needs to go to get at that point. It's just like okay, when we first started on Vedanta Sutra, it was kind of like, why are we doing this? You know? That went on for, I think, 1 year. Then in the second year, it's kind of like, okay, you know, but notice the questions. Are the questions that we're coming up with are all on deep-rooted doubts that are so simple. You know, I mean, if the question was brought up and people didn't know it was a Vedanta Sutra class, they would think that these are just basic points. Right? So, because that's the whole thing, is that the basic point is I'm the controller and the enjoyer. And so all this is just to remove that, that misgiving. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the fun part, is now we're dealing with it on that level that you're exactly getting at each little point. So the discussion is much deeper than, let's say, the person who first walks in the temple or the new bhakta. You understand? Because there it's just getting rid of the immediate doubt. But as you go, it's going deeper and deeper and deeper, till now we're looking at it, you know, what we're discussing here in Vedanta Sutra, that's threatening our materialistic perception. You know, but we won't call it a materialistic perception. What we'll just call my identity, who I am and what I do and why I do things. That's the difference. Well, the other is just, oh yeah, that's Maya. And so then, okay. But then, you know, getting into how that is and all that, that's not that way. Sorry, the first guy looks, because his elephant's higher, he walks different. The second one, he's lower, so he goes through those mango trees, and he always has to watch out for the mangoes. But the first one doesn't. I think maybe he goes down the middle of the road, and the other one goes on the side or something. You understand? So that's the thing, is we're just going deeper and deeper into these. And so then with this, then we remove that. Then we'll start, then the positive comes up. How to apply that in Krishna service. So you'll see we'll be discussing the same points in Chaitanya Charitamrita. All these points, a lot of these points of the that were given are from Chaitanya Charitamrita and Prabhupada's purports. Because that technical philosophy, especially Madhya Leela, that's all discussed, because that's who you're talking to, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you know, Prakashananda Saraswati. You know, you're talking very technical, you know, this kind of thing here. Like that. But then you'll see is that then you have the process with Sanatana, I mean, the basis of devotional service, the process with Rupa Goswami, and then the goal of devotional service with Ramananda Rai. So you see, as the first two, they're removing all the doubts that you actually are on the transcendental platform, you know, or the spiritual platform. Then the other three then situate you in that transcendental relationship with the Lord. Mm-hmm. So we'll be discussing these same things again, but as we go through, it gets finer and finer. You know, saying Gita, it's just that they exist. Then the first six cantos of Bhagavatam, then you're hearing how to engage whatever your condition is in Krishna's service. And that is connected to Krishna. That's the important part. That's the focus. Though pure devotion is mentioned all the way from Bhagavad Gita. But then in the second six cantos, then you'll see the emphasis is on that pure devotion. That you're engaging in Krishna service, but it has to be about pure devotion, not that it's just connected. Right? Because it's for a more advanced position. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita then takes it more than that. Is that make sense?
Much. So then we find that whether any book we take, even Vedanta Sutras, so Sambandal is more important because so much of emphasis and effort goes on in explaining.
Yes, it goes because that's the biggest area, because it's gyan, it includes all the others. It's the knowledge about all of them.
Hmm.
Right? So in other words, in Sambandal gyan, I have to know the, you know, the knowledge itself, the attitude in that, what is the goal I can get and what's the process you can get that with. When you have all those four aspects, right, then that's called Sambandhyan, right? But now I have to apply that, that's Abhideya, and I have to actually get the result, that's Prayojana. So I can't apply unless I have that Sambandhyan, because unless I know what is the process? What is the result? What is the knowledge for that? What's the, how will I get it? Because if I don't have the knowledge, how do I apply it to get a result? Right? If I don't understand the attitude, how will I, from getting that result, how will I get a particular experience? I use the wrong attitude, I get the wrong experience. Because the experience matches the attitude. You know, so if I'm a nasty person, then the result I get is nastiness. Doesn't matter, you do the process nicely, you'll get nastiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I deal nicely, I'll get niceness. Right? I'm Krishna conscious, I'll get Krishna consciousness. So that's the whole point, is depending upon your attitude, that's the experience you'll get from it. See, nowadays people focus on the result itself. That if I get that result, that's all that matters. But they don't know that depending upon the attitude you use, then that's the result you get. Because the point is if the end justifies the means, why doesn't Robespierre still have his head? Right? He lost his head because he used a improper means to gain a so-called glorious end. But because the attitude's wrong, then the result he gets is also going to be wrong. You know? Does that make sense? So you see, he has that attitude of this. Just bring down authority in this, and that authority's created problem. Remove the authority. That's going to... And so, but everybody gets removed, including him. And there's no one left. So therefore, then, no one's left, then, at least according to the history, then a little short guy came along and took over, because there was no one else there. Mm-hmm. Not that he wasn't good, but the point is, you know, he saw the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they say he actually wasn't that short. You know. But in any case. You know, so it's just that. So it, then he comes in, it's about control and, you know, expanding and that. And that's the results he gets. But then what is the effect? Someone else comes in and controls, and he ends up, enjoying room temperature horse urine in Corsica. Right? Isn't that why everyone goes to Corsica for vacation? You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that the attitude you use, that's what you get. You know, there's the saying, live by the sword, die by the sword. That's how it works. So that attitude then defines what results, what is the experience you'll get from the result. The knowledge and skill and its application will define what result you get. But the experience, whether that's good or bad, depends upon your attitude. So that's why if you don't see all four of these, then you don't have sambandha. So that's why you have to put in more time. Because once you've accepted that's all in place, application is just the knowledge of the application and its relationship to the result. And result, once you have result, it's result. How big does that have to be? So therefore you'll see sambandha will have the biggest area, then abhidhaya will be medium, and prayojana will be small. Because that's just how much do you need to put.
So can you say that sambandha and prayojana are static, abhidhaya is dynamic? Because the application...
Abhideya means abhideya is the application of the sambandha gyan.
So there the dynamics is involved.
Yes, but the point is you always have to have, if there's a dynamic, if everything's dynamic, does it work?
In some cases, no. It doesn't work.
Yeah. You know, the fire's moving, the pot's moving, the spoon's moving, the sabjis are moving, you're moving, is that going to make it work? Right? You know, you put the pot on the fire, you turn around, something, you go back, the pot's on the next fire. What? Okay. You know, and then you go and they put it back on the fire, then you get something else, and then the subjects are on the fire and the pot's still there. You know, and then, you know, is that what you want? You know, you go to pick up the spoon and it gives you a slap in the face. Okay, so you go into the one thing and it's in the next one. You know, the fire's there, and then you go, why it's so slow, the fire's not there. You look underneath, it's not there. So then, you know, you move it over where it is, the fire, then it moves back, you know, straight out of vaudeville, right? You know, so that's not the way you want it. So everything functions because there is a combination between the dynamic and the static. And then how you define what's dynamic and what's static, then that depends upon what angle you take.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Good. Not good. Maybe good. Somewhat good. Okay. Okay, Shamshai. Now the next doubt. If the manifestation of an object happens as a manifestation of itself, then why imagine another manifestation as cause? Right? Because they're saying if the cause is the effect, then there's no, you know, there's no difference, so it's already existing. Why do you have to say it has a cause? You understand? Because they're not seeing that there's the effect, that they're the same, but they can tell the difference. In other words, the same, but there's a difference. So this has all been answered before, but just because it's been answered doesn't mean that the doubt doesn't remain.
Yes.
So now we're dealing with the doubt. So they've made the original main point, then the answer is given, which answers actually all of their points. Now you go through one by one the fine points that they bring up about it. So it seems like there's so many more points, but it's not. It all comes down to God's in control and we're not. And so we're trying to avoid that conclusion. Therefore, so much discussion. Right? So, in other words, Vedanta Sutra is the size that it is and has all the knowledge that it has because people are so intent on being the supreme controller and enjoyer. So, breaking down all the different philosophies, philosophical points that they may have to support that, that's then what the Vedanta does. Right? So if you notice there's a pattern, it's always the same thing. It's always the same thing. Like if I come up and say, yeah, and so then therefore he was in this situation and these things happened to him, what's going to be the question? And it's going to be, so do we have free will or not? You know, is it all predestiny or like that? You know, right? Always. You know, so if you push karma too much, then people go free will. You know? Yeah, and if they push free will too much, then you have to point out, no, there's activities, there's reactions. So that's the thing, is the balance, the perfect balance. Does that make sense? So it means the razor's edge is a certain size, and you have unlimited on both sides. And so those unlimiteds, then they're into major categories that then are as defined by the Vedanta.
Another famous thing is, I'm soul, I'm not responsible.
I'm
not responsible.
You're the soul, you're not responsible. Great, so then you won't mind if I hit you up the side of the head with a cricket bat. Because I'm not responsible. And you're just the soul, you're not the body, so you won't care about, you know, the bump on the side of your head.
So when it comes either, like maybe you have to do your karma, then I'm not responsible anyway, I'm not in control.
Yeah, but at the same time as they'll blame everybody else, so they're therefore them. So, in other words, especially in this state, then they shouldn't espouse this philosophy. Because they'll be, you know, this party's good, that one's bad. No, but it's all the soul, so nobody's at fault here. So it really doesn't matter which party is in control and all that. Is that going to work here? No. So, therefore. Durr. Yes. Okay, Uttara. If you say this, it is the same as our proposition, manifestation of something that was previously existing. We already say that. You're manifesting something that's already existing. But there's a difference in it, so you can tell. Just like clay, it was already existing. But there's a difference in the purpose in that of the clay in this form. So therefore it has a particular name. So you're identifying it as something different because of its application, its usage. But it's actually the same thing. Yes.
At this point, many times we discuss about that soul, the qualities of soul. But it is as seen as a part and parcel, we can see as the effect. But unless one discuss about the soul, which is the supreme law, and just focus on the qualities of soul, go on and on, still it will not be perfect. Because
no. It may elevate you out of the material world temporarily, you know, out of the material misery that comes from action and reaction, but it won't actually satisfy the soul, which is by nature servant of Krishna, right? Because it, as an energy, then Sachi Ananda means that it's interactive, it's dynamic. Ananda means it's the interaction on the spiritual platform. Right? Mati pointed out, Sukha, that's where the senses and the sense objects interact. Mm-hmm. Right? But we can also take it beyond, because it means words, but if you want to get it down, just like we say transcendental and spiritual. Spiritual means the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. But if we want to make a distinction between the liberated platform of eternal existence, then we'll say spiritual, and then we'll say the interaction that's transcendental. You know, just to give it some understanding. So the same way is that then what were we talking about then? we're making a point, and I was going to bring that analogy across to this one. I'm waiting for that. Oh yeah, that's super. Mm-hmm. So therefore then in here, even though you may be able to interchange the words, and they are sometimes, but in this context then bliss means the interaction on the transcendental platform. And sukha means the senses that are engaged in that process. So the sense will get a experience from that interaction, but that does not compare to the experience gained from interacting in devotion to the Lord. You know, it's just like cooking in a nice kitchen gives you an experience, but it's not as good as experiencing the food that's the result of that.
Many times we mistake.
That's the point, we mistake. That's the big deal.
And most of the New Age kind of stuff, like wherever they explain, at max they go to this kind of like sukha that you are present, and
it's about sukha with good qualities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It seems as though it's transcendental that they have got the point, but there's no.
No, there's no point, because it's only about the senses. That's why you see is when you get more impersonal, it brings out sense gratification. Mm-hmm. So the more impersonal they get, the more absorbed in sense gratification they are. Because then there's no rules, there's no standards, so then what's left is just your experience, what you're gaining from it. So then you define. There's no law. So then you end up. So, because if you have raga, dvesha, bhaya, krodha, right? So you have the rag, the attachment, then from dealing with that you become frustrated, you go into bhaya, you know, into the impersonal. Then when you get frustrated that the impersonal, the liberation doesn't work, you go into nothingness. And then from nothingness you come back around to sense gratification again. So that's the point, is it automatically brings up, just as karma brings up jnana. Right? But if it's not spiritual, then that will bring up nothingness. Nothingness will bring up the sense gratification again. Karma again. So it has to go that way. That's the law. That's how it works. So they're feeling that they're doing something on their own. It's new, different, unique. Right? Now the new age is going on here. Don't people think it's the newest, the latest? It's something that's never gone on before? Yeah, my grandmother was new age. That means she was new age back in the 30s and 40s. Right? You know, as when she was young. Right? Because otherwise then, you know, I know then she was a grandmother. So at one point grandmothers, strangely enough, were, you know, young girls at one point. Right? So that means that was there. And then if you look at it, you go back into it, then back in the, you know, in the Belle Epoque.
Belle Epoque,
then that was oriental aspects were so much part of why it was so grand. Means they had great opulence. They were thinking, what do you think about? You think about all these things, the oriental aspects like that. That's New Age. That all goes back before that. You know, back, you know, so it all goes back, you say 1700s, 1600s they bumped into it. It probably became interesting in the 1700s when you could think about it instead of thinking about religion. So that means New Age, in you know, what we call it now, goes back, you know, more than 250 years. But all these things and that, then if you look at it now, when they go back, tarot cards and this and that, then getting all those going back to the Egyptians, going back to... So we're talking thousands of years. And so now in the Vedic thing, you know, astrology and all these things, let's say you're going to have a marriage. Do you look at astrology? You know, the child's born, do you look at the chart, right? In the West, do they do that? No, only New Age people would do that. So they think, oh, wow, you know, it's so different. But it's what everybody does here. In other words, New Age is just the standard, normal part of the life of any, you know, traditional Indian. I mean, it's just the way it is. You know, Ayurveda, like that. You go there, you're sick, you go there, stick out your hand, the doctor takes his, you know, pulse, you know, the pulse and all that. He doesn't charge for that. You know, you go to, they take those, you know, they take these guys to the West, they'll charge you $300 for that. Like that. Here it's just ordinary. You know, it's the way you do it. You know, there isn't any other way to do it. You know what I'm saying? So the diet, according to the seasons, according to this and that, then these are all just normal things that people do. But then they take out the reason for that is the culture itself and how that goes to, you know, in other words, you have the Lord Himself. You have that culture in which you serve the Lord. And then you just have the particular mechanical effects of that. That's what New Age is taking. And then somehow or another it's so glorious and all that, when it's like, you know, Prabhupada's been talking about that all along. You know? So in other words, if Prabhupada says, oh, if you do, you know, for the marriage you should do the chart, oh, that's rules, and we're devotees, we're above the rules, that's fanatic, we don't need that. But if New Age says, oh, you know, if the girl is this, and then that, you know, this house with that, and then, you know, these and that, and, you know, oh, wow, you know, then it's something really to get into, and then you're talking about your friends, it's on Facebook, you know, you're making a whole scene out of it. But if Prabhupada brings it in, then it's not good. So in other words, you have to have this as just an experience rather than the science. Prabhupada's talking about the science. It'll give you the experience, but New Age means it just talks about the experience. Does that make sense? Yeah, because that's all. So in other words, New Age is quite old. Okay, so we see here is that then what happening is all these points that they're making, they're already synthesized into our philosophy. That's the point. Is that they're already there. The oneness that they want is already in our philosophy. The difference, that's already in the philosophy. The difficulty is they can't catch the oneness and the difference. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.22 and 7.3.26. As pots made completely of earth are situated on the earth after being created and are transformed into earth again when broken, this cosmic manifestation is caused by the Supreme Brahman, situated in the Supreme Brahman, and annihilated in the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, since the Supreme Lord is the cause of Brahman, let us offer Him our respectful obeisances. So if they want a cause for Brahman, then that's Krishna Himself as a person. So we're not getting into that in this part of Vedanta Sutra. Maybe in the fourth section. Then Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.16. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, knowledge and ignorance. Your multi-energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful, is the cause of the material manifestation. Because you are the same impersonal Brahman, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Now, footnote 25. Srila Prabhupada explains that impersonal Brahman is the first step in God realization, whereas Bhagavan is the ultimate realization. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the unlimited impersonal Brahman is the effulgence of the transcendental body of Govinda. In that unlimited effulgent aura of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are innumerable universes with innumerable planets of different categories. Although the Supreme Person is the original cause of all causes, His impersonal effulgence, known as Brahman, is the immediate cause of the material manifestation. Dhruva Maharaj therefore offered his respectful obeisances unto the impersonal feature of the Lord. One who realizes this impersonal feature can enjoy the unchangeable Brahmananda, described here as spiritual bliss. Right, so one who understands this, then there's nothing of this world, so therefore then you're situated on that transcendental position. But for us, that's not a goal, that's just the proper situation to be in. You know, just like we said, the proper situation to cook is to be in the kitchen. It's not about being in the kitchen, it's about cooking. But the best place is in the kitchen. So the best place to worship Krishna then is where that platform where you're transcendentally situated. You're not involved in material attachments and illusion. So being above that, that's the position that therefore then you can serve Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's then the point that he's pointing, because he's that, so that being situated there, everything here is coming from Brahman, and that's just Krishna's effulgence, so I offer my respects to Krishna, who his effulgence is the actual source of this material world. So,
is it why when we are, when we see the deity, there is always the effulgence?
Yes.
So it is Brahman.
Yeah, because it's refulgent. It's nice.
But it's mean.
But it's just like. But that's coming because of his blissful attitude. Just like, let's say someone is happy, do they not have an aura?
Ah, yes.
And when they're feeling miserable, then they look dark.
Yes.
You know, so it's just natural. So it's just a stylized form. It looks very nice. You know.
Yes, yes, yes. Because it's always in the devotion. It's always
in the that's the standard. Yes. And you see in the paintings, then there should be some, there'll be some that effulgence. They'll put bigger around the head. Things like that.
Yes, mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the standard way of doing it. You even see in these old paintings, they would do of saintly people, like in the European paintings, saintly people, they always have that aura around them. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's just the standard thing. You know, in other words, Krishna, he has this Brahman effulgence, so if you're absorbed in Krishna, then naturally you have that, some of that effulgence.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like that, because it's Krishna you're absorbed in.
So if the aura is not there, then one is dead.
If the aura is not there, then one is dead.
Sounds.
That's it. Yeah, okay. That would work. Yeah. So if you're wondering why there's an aura, it means they're not dead.
Yeah.
So that's how you can tell.
I need to bring my efficiency.
Yeah. Then the problem is where you can hang it. You can provide strings down and then come and hook on the
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Natai Gaura Prabhupada.
One time when I was listening to deity in France, I forget to put the questions. That's a big problem.
Yeah. No, you have to remember. Big problem.
Going there.
Yeah. It's always that lady Pujari who figures it out.
Yeah. Making a big thing. Many Pujari are ladies in the West.
Yes.